All the visitors' slots in the car park behind the main administration block of Capricorn Industries were filled. Most of the visiting vehicles were black limousines sporting ministerial number plates or military pennants on the bonnet. She rode up in the lift, and as she stepped into the director's suite, she surveyed the room swiftly. It was a small, almost intimate gathering. No more than 20 persons were present, and she was the only woman. The politicals and the civil servants were in regulation dark suits, and the military were in uniform. There were all branches of the service represented, including the security police, and they were all of staff or general rank. She knew more than half those present, including the cabinet minister and the two deputy ministers. A refreshment table had been laid out, including alcohol, but nobody was drinking anything stronger than coffee. The conversations were exclusively in Afrikaans, and she was struck once again by the major difference between the two white races. The English section was preoccupied with luxury and material possessions, with finance and commerce. The Afrikaner lived in the halls of political and military power. Here were gathered some of the most powerful men in the land. Though paupers compared to the Courtenays, their political influence dominated the entire society. Compared to them, the Courtenays were of little account. Within the citadel of power, the military men, rather like their Russian equivalents, formed a caste of their own before whose strengths even the state president bowed his head. Within seconds she had singled out the most influential men in the room and made her way towards them, exchanging greetings and handshakes and smiles with the others as she passed. In this patriarchal society she had carved an unusual niche for herself. They accepted her as almost an equal. "I am a sort of honorary male," she smiled to herself, and shook hands with the Minister of Defence, then turned to his deputy with a controlled and friendly smile. "Good morning, General de la Rey," she greeted him in fluent colloquial Afrikaans. Lothar de la Rey had been the first grand passion of her life. They had lived together for 6 months before he had dropped her and gone off to marry a good Afrikaner girl of the Dutch Reformed faith. If he had not, he would not now be a deputy minister, and a man who, it was whispered, had no ceiling on his political future. "Good morning, Dr. Courtney." He was as polite, but he could not keep his eyes on her face. They slid over her body in swift appreciation. "Go ahead, lover boy," she thought, knowing that she had never looked better in her life. "Eat your heart out, then go home to your fat little farm girl." Despite her lingering resentment, she had to admit to herself that he also was good-looking. So many Afrikaners put on weight once their rugby-playing days were over. Lothar was as lean and hard and clean-cut as he had been 10 years before. He was probably just about ripe for a little fling, she thought, and he would certainly have some interesting pillow talk. "Oh, I'd love to have my revenge on you," she thought. She had once contemplated suicide for him. It would give her pleasure to place him on the list of Red Rose's informers. Then quite suddenly she thought of Ramon, her Ramon, and her physical interest in Lothar subsided. Only in the line of duty, she decided, and at that moment the Capricorn general manager caught her eye. She made a short welcoming address to the company and apologized for the absence of the chairman. Then she invited them through into the projection room for the presentation. The video film that Capricorn had prepared was of high professional quality. It included computer-generated simulations and artists' impressions of the deployment and dissemination of Syndex 25 under combat and battlefield conditions. As the video ran, Isabella glanced round the semi-darkened room. She could see that all the military men were passionately excited about this new weapon. They watched the screen with a deadly concentration, and when the tape came to an end, they broke into animated discussion amongst themselves. When Paul Searle, the Israeli technical director, whom Isabella had recruited in Tel Aviv, stood up and called for comment, they bombarded him with searching questions. Isabella noticed that up to this time there had been no sign of Ben. His brown face had been discreetly kept in a back room somewhere. Inevitably, one of the generals asked the question that Isabella had been dreading. He put it bluntly. "Has this gas ever been used on a human population? If so, can you give us details?" "Perhaps the general can provide us with a few surplus Cuban POWs from Angola," the director asked, and they laughed delightedly at the graveyard humour. "Seriously, General, the answer to your question is no. However, it has been tested extensively overseas under laboratory conditions with excellent results. In fact, we have arranged for you to witness our own first test today. The Pesticide and Poisons Division of Capricorn Chemicals was situated half a mile from the administrative block. The party drove down in a convoy, with the minister's black Cadillac in the lead. Isabella sat beside him in the back seat and pointed out features of the Capricorn plant.
"This section here is the uranium enrichment plant. You see how we have made it appear to be merely an extension of the main bulk phosphate refinery."
The Minister of Defence had the reputation of possessing a fiery temper. However, she had always got on well with him, and respected him for his dedication and political acumen. They chatted in friendly fashion during the short drive until they drew up at the front gate of the pesticide and agricultural poisons plant. This was a separate compound within the main complex. It was surrounded by a 12-foot diamond mesh fence. There were prominent warning notices placed at intervals along the fence. These featured red skull and crossbone signs with warnings in three languages. Danger, Khafar, Ngozi. The guards at the main gate had Rottweiler guard dogs on leads. The plant was screened by a grove of trees. The building was long and low, the walls were of natural stone, and all the external windows were smoked one-way glass. There was a further security check at the entrance, and even the minister was asked to pass through the electronic scanner. The Israeli director led them down a series of carpeted corridors, each separated by steel, fire and gas-proof doors, until finally they entered the new Syndex extension. The building was still so new that it smelt of raw concrete. They assembled in a small entrance lobby. The gas doors closed behind them, and the director addressed them. "Strict safety procedures are in force in this section of the building. You will notice the air conditioning." He gestured at the panels in the walls. "The quality of the air in the building is strictly monitored at all times. In the highly unlikely event of a leak developing, the air can be pumped out and changed within 10 seconds. For a few minutes more, he elaborated on the building's safety features. "However, for your further safety before entering the main plant, you will be required to don protective suits." There were separate changing rooms for the sexes. In the women's room, a coloured female attendant assisted Isabella to strip to her underwear, and then she hung her suit in one of the lockers for her. She helped Isabella into the one-piece white protective overall that had been laid out for her. There were white plastic boots and gloves, and she showed Isabella how to place the helmet over her head and switch on the compressed air supply. There was a clear plastic visor, and the air cylinder was contained in a neat backpack that formed part of the helmet attachment. There were built-in headphones that permitted normal conversation. Isabella returned to the lobby and rejoined the rest of the party. "If we are all ready, my lady and gentlemen," the director turned to the door in the far wall. It slid open and they trooped through. There were four technicians to welcome them. Isabella noticed that while the visitors wore white suits, the four technicians were in chrome yellow, and the director's suit was tomato red for easy identification. One of the yellow-suited technicians ushered them down yet another short corridor. As they went, he fell in beside Isabella. "Good morning, Dr. Courtney," he said softly, and with a small shock she recognized his voice, and she looked into his visor. "Hello, Mr. Africa," she murmured. "How are you enjoying your job with Capricorn?" It was the first time she had seen him since London. "It's very interesting, thank you." That was all that passed between them before they entered the test room. But Lota de la Rey had been watching her. As they seated themselves in the row of padded leather armchairs, Lota took the seat beside Isabella and asked, "Visti coffee? Who's the nigger?"
"His name is Africa. He has a degree in chemical engineering."
"Well, how do you know him?" Lota insisted.
"I was on the selection committee who recruited him."
"He has security clearance, of course."
"Of course, he was cleared by your own department," she added artlessly. He nodded, and they turned their attention back to the director.
"These are the test cubicles."
At the end of the room were four windows that looked in upon separate chambers. Each was the size of a telephone booth, or a toilet cabinet was a better description, Isabella decided. "The windows are of double armoured glass," the director pointed out, and you will notice the monitors above each. He pointed to the electronic panels, on which vital life functions were displayed in green LED printout. Behind the windows, strapped to bare white plastic chairs, were four small humanoid figures. For a moment, Isabella thought they were children, and then the director explained.
The test subjects are baboons of the genus Papio Ursinus. They may seem unfamiliar to you because they have been shaved to resemble human subjects more closely. You will notice that number one is almost completely unprotected.
The naked, shaven body strapped to the chair in the first cubicle was pathetically vulnerable-looking. The infant's disposable nappy, which was its only garment, added to the poignancy.
Number two is wearing clothing that resembles normal military uniform. This baboon was dressed in a miniature suit of combat fatigues, but the arms and head were unprotected. Number three is fully covered except for eyes, mouth and nose.
The animal wore gloves and a soft plastic hood, which left only its face bare.
Number four is equipped with a fully protective suit similar to those which have been issued to you. These will be worn by friendly forces when handling or disseminating Syndex 25.
He paused.
I may add that subjects 1, 2, and 3 have been sedated. There will be physical symptoms apparent upon application of the test agent, but these are reflexive reactions of the central nervous system and should not be construed as indicating the degree of suffering that the animal is undergoing.
Isabella felt her stomach muscles tightening, and despite the filtered air she was breathing, her chest felt tight and constricted.
Syndex 25 is colourless and odourless. However, for safety reasons, we have added the scent of almonds to our gas. There will be no aerosol mist or any other indication of its application except via the monitoring equipment. The readout will show parts of Syndex 25 in 100,000 parts of air.
He paused and cleared his throat.
Now, gentlemen and my lady, if you are ready, we will proceed with the demonstration.
The minister nodded his helmeted head, and the director gave a terse order into the microphone on his desk. Isabella imagined Ben, or one of the other technicians, adjusting the controls in the back room. For a few seconds, nothing happened. The breathing and the heartbeats of the four baboons continued sedately tracing regular luminous green patterns on the screens. Then the panel registering the concentration of Syndex 25 in the inflowing air flickered and moved up from 0 to 5. 5 parts of nerve gas in 100,000 parts of air. Within seconds the displays began to alter, all except that above the fully suited baboon. The heartbeats accelerated swiftly, the breathing became rapid and deep, the changes were most violent on the display panel above the naked ape. Isabella stared at it in horror. She saw its eyelids flicker and tears begin to run down the shaven face. It mouthed the air, its tongue lolling and rolling between its lips. Strings of silver saliva drooled down onto its chest.
15 seconds, intoned the director. Subject number one is now incapacitated. Number four is unaffected. 2 and 3 are registering medium to acute symptoms.
The naked baboon began to writhe and struggle against the retaining straps. Isabella tasted the bitter bile rising in the back of her throat and swallowed it down.
Suddenly the baboon opened its mouth wide and shrieked. The thin, agonized cry carried to them even through the double-glazed windows. It ripped along Isabella's nerve endings. She clenched her fists and felt cold, sickly sweat break out beneath the clinging white suit. Beside her she felt Lota de la Rey stir, and all around her the other men made small, instinctive gestures of revulsion and discomfort. They were soldiers and policemen hardened to atrocity and suffering. Yet they shuffled their feet, clenched their gloved hands, or made ducking, twisting movements of their heads.
All three of the exposed animals were twitching and kicking, rolling their heads, arching their spines in spasmodic convulsions. The mucous linings of their tongues and their open, screaming mouths turned a bright, boiled scarlet. Their fluttering, streaming eyeballs glazed over with a network of bloodshot veins. They began to vomit. The nappy that the first baboon wore was soiled by a spreading stain of urine and feces.
Isabella fought down the waves of nausea that rose to engulf her. She wanted to scream, to run, to hide from the horror of it.
1 minute 5 seconds. Number one, all vital signs of life terminated. The pathetic, childlike corpse hung against the straps. Its shaven nakedness was aberrant and obscene. 2 minutes, 15 seconds, number two terminated. 3 minutes, 8 seconds, number three terminated. You will notice that number four is totally unaffected. The suit has afforded complete protection. Isabella rose to her feet. "Excuse me," she blurted. She had been determined to outlast any of the men in the room. Her vow was forgotten now. She fled down the corridor and burst into the women's changing room. She ripped the helmet from her head and dropped on her knees and clutched the cold porcelain of the toilet bowl with both hands. She choked and sobbed, and her horror and pity and guilt shot up her throat in a thick, bitter, acid stream and spewed into the bowl.